Welcome, Junkions, to an especially shameless episode of Junk Food Cinema brought to you by FilmSchoolRejects.com.
Dot mullets.
I am your host, Brian Salisbury, and I'm joined, as per usual, by my friend and co-host. He's a novelist, a screenwriter, someone who definitely is a prospect of Megaforce. I don't know if you say you're a lieutenant. I think you might still be a prospect.
I'm a lieutenant, and also, I guarantee the only person in this podcast to actually have had a mullet.
You know, you say things that the way you say them sounds like a brag.
Oh,
but
no.
The content of what you're saying.
Let me pop a beer while we talk about the times when mullets were cool. And that they didn't even have a name. They were just a type of haircut that was business up front, party in the back.
Yeah, a real Billy Ray Cyrus, if you will.
Really, dude, we could joke about Billy Ray all we want, but there was 6 months where just about every woman in this country would drop her panties for Billy Ray, and then those 6 months were up.
Yeah, and then people were like, okay, what's the next wedding dance song that we can listen to ad nauseum?
I'll say, it was the weirdest fucking thing when the word mullet appeared, and the whole history of how mullet happened, because nobody had mullets.
Sure.
It wasn't like, oh, dude, that nice mullet. Like, no, the mullet was an internet gag that happened in 96 and 97 when there was this website, like, I think it was called mullets.com, that had pictures of guys in mullets because the hairstyle had phased out and everybody went, hey, this is funny. And a bunch of us looked at it and said, I guess it was kind of funny.
That I had that exact haircut.
That we all had that exact haircut. I lived in fucking Texas, brother. Mullet fucking central down here.
And speaking of Mullet Central, if you would like to hear our back catalog of episodes, you can go to Blog Talk Radio or iTunes. I feel like Junk Food Cinema is the mullet of movie podcasts, so that's very apt.
I don't know, because people seem to like looking back on our old episodes.
Right. They like looking party in the back, but we do all the business up front, so it makes a lot of sense.
Get the business done.
So you can follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema. Like the podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/junkfoodcinema. And if you really like the show.
I mean, really, really like Brian Bosworth.
Yeah. If you like the show more than Brian Bosworth likes skunky hair care products, you can go to patreon.com/junkfoodcinema. And for as little as $1 an episode, you can get access to content that nobody else gets to hear. And also, if you really like the show, we have a swag store. You can actually brand yourself as a Junkion.
And if you really, really, really like the show.
This is something, by the way, the link for that is junkfoodcinema.com/store. But you're right. This is something we need to address up front.
We need to address this because if you're a big fan of this show and you're like, I'm a huge fan of this show. I'm such a fan that I'm going to send Brian and Cargill a GIF every day to try to get them to cover this movie that I would like. We are whores and can be bought.
Oh, yeah.
And we have had this thing for quite some time. And this is only the second time anybody's pulled the trigger on this.
True story.
But we have a patron option where you can buy yourself an episode and we have to cover the movie that you request. Now, we may give you a little feedback on it and be like, oh, we can talk about that. But this week's episode was certainly bought and paid for by a fan because this is not a movie Brian or I would have put on the short list.
You know, I hesitate to say that because...
No, I didn't say we wouldn't talk about it.
Oh, but we wouldn't be on the short list.
I said it wouldn't be on the short list. This is not one of our picks. However, I think we're going to have a lot of fun, and I might get a mullet again just because.
Just because this week's movie is a 1991 action film called...
Stone Cold!
They warned him when he went undercover that this would be a most unpleasant assignment.
I look forward to it.
But nobody expects him to be pleasant.
Put up the wrong passenger, buddy!
Brian Bosworth is stone cold.
And then some.
Rated R.
And I thought I knew you so well. Oh, wait, no, not the song Stone Cold by Rainbow. And not Stone Cold Steve Austin, my all-time favorite wrestler. This is a movie called Stone Cold, directed by, A strangely a recognizable alum of junk food cinema.
An alum of junk food cinema who now stands amongst a very small select group of directors in us having committed at least three episodes to their movies. We are, of course, talking about Craig Baxley, director
of Action Jackson, as well as
I Come in Peace,
also known as
Dark Angel,
but really it's just
I Come in Peace.
Don't fuck with us. It's I Come in Peace.
Yes, look, I get it. It was distributed in foreign territories that way, and the only way you could get it on DVD and Blu-ray for years was as Dark Angel. But I saw it in theater opening weekend as I Come in Peace.
Look.
And it will stay I Come in Peace.
The ending, the kick-ass ending line of the movie is not, "And you're Dark Angel, asshole." It's, "No, I come in peace, you go in peace.
And you'll go in pieces,
asshole." Boom. Like, amazing. Here's the thing.
The thing.
We are, you're absolutely right. This is the Craig R. Baxley hat trick that we're pulling off. We have now officially covered, I am in full belief that this is true, the three of the six of his movies that were released in theaters.
Yeah, he was, of course, a stunt coordinator for the A-Team, had a bunch of stunt credits, and he went on to make a bunch of action movies. Three of them gloriously cheesy, amazing things.
Like, yes.
You know, we talked about Action Jackson, and Action Jackson is just perfection in fun. I Come in Peace is a terrible, terrible movie that fires on all cylinders and never fails to entertain. How did this become an idea that somebody made? It just was, and they fucking made it, and it's fucking amazing. And here we have Stone Cold, easily the weakest of the set, of the triptych.
But
still kind of amazing.
It has a lot of things that we've come to expect from Baxley. Like, yes, even when the plot doesn't make a lot of sense, even when it's very...
any sense.
Even when it's very, very silly, the stunt work in this movie is hard to argue with the stunt work in this movie, because they pull off some shit in this movie that is so dangerous that you're like, this seems unwise to put on film, but they did it anyway.
You know, and that is the thing. If there is one major reason to watch this movie, the stunts in it are kind of fucking insane. Like, there's a motorcycle gunfight.
Yeah.
There's people falling out of buildings and out of helicopters, and people doing stuff that should get them hurt, and yet it's all wrapped around the chewy center of Brian Bosworth's mullet.
Now, we need to talk about the Boz, in that I feel like if you don't watch a lot of the same movies that we will spend our time watching, whether we're specifically asked to by patron Larry Sternshine or not, yes, I'm going to let people know.
Yeah, by the way, Larry, thank you for bringing Stone Cold into our life and for the $25.
Thank you for supporting the show, and we are more than happy to talk about Stone Cold, because I actually really enjoy this movie on the exact level of junk food cinema. The Boz, as he was known, was a great... It's funny that in this movie he joins a biker gang as a prospect, because he was a huge NFL prospect coming out of the University of Oklahoma, which it is currently 9:02 p.m. in Austin, Texas, and OU still sucks. Sorry, guys. We beat them over the weekend. It was huge for me. But the Boz was this incredible linebacker. Just everyone knew he was going to be the next big deal in the NFL. He played for the Seattle Seahawks. And during his tenure with the Seahawks, he was well known enough that they thought he could be a movie star. He had a lot of attitude and a lot of charisma, and he had these crazy ass haircuts. And he was
cut from fucking marble,
yeah,
and was good looking and was everything in the late 80s that everybody wanted to be. Of course, we got over that, but at the time,
that was it.
He was kind of the fucking shit.
Which is funny, because connecting this to other Baxley works, he does kind of look like Craig T. Nelson on creatine. Like, he's got a little bit of, like, if Craig T. Nelson had the actual Mr. Incredible jaw.
I feel like he's like Craig T. Nelson, if the child of Craig T. Nelson and Sharon Stone.
Yes, there you go.
Like, you take everything beautiful about Sharon Stone and put in all that manliness of Craig T. Nelson, you kind of get the Boz out of it.
Yeah, and he only played two seasons in the NFL. He had a horrific shoulder injury that forced him to retire after only 2 years. But he did, in that time, make some movies that – I have a feeling this might not be the only Brian Bosworth movie we talk about. This is definitely the best of the Brian Bosworth movies.
Well, I mean,
The Longest Yard, you could argue, but well, he has a very small part in that movie.
The best movies that he appeared in or the best movies he starred in. Clearly, this is probably the best movie that he starred in.
Yes.
He did appear in Three Kings and The Longest Yard. So, yeah. Like, when you're talking about best movies, it's kind of like... Three Kings is kind of fucking amazing.
We're talking about Boz vehicles, which in this movie clearly is a Harley Davidson. And this vehicle built for Brian Bosworth is, in its entirety, just Point Break on motorcycles.
I will point out, though, and I think this is important to state, the reason to watch Stone Cold has nothing to do with Brian Bosworth.
Not even a little bit.
Like, we spent a lot of time talking about him because we're about to blow right past him. And we'll enjoy the fun of Brian Bosworth, who everybody thought could be a star, but not an actor.
well, I mean, to be fair, in the late 80s, early 90s, those two things did not go hand in hand. Like, you didn't have to have column A and column B. You could be a star without knowing how to act.
I mean, you act like that's not still a thing.
This is very true.
I mean...
I guess it was more pronounced in this era. Like, there were... Like, let me put it this way. I think Brian Bosworth has every bit of charm and charisma of someone like Jeff Speakman. Jeff Speakman made a lot of movies in this era, too.
Sure.
You didn't have to have either of those things. You could just be strong, and the camera could be pointed at you, and career. So, I mean, you know, kudos to them for being able to pull that off. This movie is about Brian Bosworth is, he's an Alabama cop. First of all, this movie takes place in the deepest of the Deep South.
The deepest of the Deep South, so much so that you could play a drinking game with the Confederate flags in 1990s South in this movie. It's a little uncomfortable how many...
It's the most uncomfortable drinking game you've ever played.
There is a moment where they have this whole moment where... they have this, because we'll get to the actors here in a minute, but the leader of the gang, Chains, is talking about the colors, and these colors don't run, and it's a little creepy how on point for the alt-right a lot of this stuff is, but he holds up the flag, and you're like, oh, hey, there's an SS across it. Oh, these aren't just bikers as portrayed in the movie. These are fucking neo-Nazi white supremacist bikers.
Yeah.
They don't deal with any of the neo-Nazism at all. Like, it's not even fucking addressed.
These are the Charlottesville Riders. Like,
This is, iconography-wise, this is what they are. In the movie, none of that exists. Like, this is just some crime outfit that happens to ride motorcycles. This movie is about as authentic as
the color of Bosworth's hair.
I was gonna go with a certain restaurant was in as an authentic Italian kitchen.
Oh, the Olive Garden.
You'll love how Italian our Italian is.
I didn't say it. Maybe you did.
Do you mean where you can get fried shrimp linguine? Like that's like, and it's not just fried shrimp, but it's like. It's like Long John Silver's fried shrimp on top of pasta.
It's that kind of authentic. It's, you know...
When you're here, you're a fucking lie.
When you're here, you're family. And
when you're here, it's a fallacy.
And you're also in an SS-loving, you know, white supremacist group. But we're not going to talk about that.
Which Olive Garden did you go to? Because I have not been to the SS-loving Olive Garden.
In Alabama.
Okay, all right. It's not even...
I was actually trying to tie in the metaphor to the gang, but...
it's like, it's not even a menu, it's just Schindler's actual list.
Yeah.
It's weird how they do things at Alabama Olive Gardens.
But so, yeah,
this is... By the way, an Alabama Olive Garden sounds like something you have to pay extra for with the hooker.
Yeah, you know what? I've given a girl an Alabama Olive Garden, and it is...
When you're here, you're disgusting.
It's like a much more refined version of an Alabama Hot Pocket.
I mean, how much more can you refine the Hot Pocket? Let's be real. Disgusting, apparently. So Brian Bosworth is an Alabama cop who gets blackmailed, full-on blackmailed by the FBI because he has the most impressive arrest record of bikers in the tri-state area. So the FBI comes down and blackmails him into going undercover with this biker gang led by Chains, played by the immortal Lance Henriksen.
Lance fucking Henriksen. Like, here we get into why you watch this movie. The most interesting things going on are Chains, the leader of the gang, and his chief lieutenant. So Chains is Henriksen, and then we've got William Forsythe as his lieutenant.
Who, by the way, had to split time between shooting this and, what was the, not Above the Law.
Out for Justice.
Out for Justice, so.
Out for Coffee.
Out to the Olive Garden.
The movie at which the joke started about Steven Seagal, and people started, he was starting to not be taken as seriously anymore. This was the beginning of that slide, and William Forsythe was there for the beginning of Brian's slide and the beginning of Seagal's slide. Of course, Brian's slide started when he decided to be an actor. So.
This is true.
But yeah, but they are really interesting, and these are two guys who, when you hire them, they are those classic guys we love to talk about, that when you hire them, you get them, and they fucking bring it all to the table, and they don't give a shit if this is some chintzy, B-movie send-up that is for some new star to be his vehicle. They are given their fucking all, and they're really kind of fucking badass, dude, in this movie.
Dude, Lance Henriksen is having so much fun in this movie that almost every line of dialogue he speaks is followed by a laugh. Almost every single time he finishes the line, he just goes, he, like, the only person who laughs more in a movie is the giggler from Death Wish 3. It's just like, this guy is loving. And in fact, all of the lines spoken from the mouth of Lance Henriksen in this movie are off the top of his goddamn head. They wrote no dialogue for Lance Henriksen.
They didn't?
He literally, everything he says is just stuff he made up.
Really?
In every scene.
That makes, wow. I wish you had told me that before I sat down to rewatch. I had not seen this since it first came out, and it was one of those things I binge watched with like three other action movies, and had mostly forgotten this movie.
Sure.
Like, I knew it existed, and anytime the name Stone Cold would come up, my first reaction would be that Brian Bosworth movie. But I, pin me to the floor, I couldn't have told you a goddamn thing about it except that he goes undercover in a biker gang. Only thing I fucking remember of it. Having watched this yesterday, I remember about 10 minutes of it now, and I could speak to that. Like, it's not a particularly memorable movie, but it makes sense to me that that happened because this movie is so clearly underwritten.
Yeah.
Like, there is a third act to this movie that is in a completely different fucking movie.
Oh, it's a fucking White House Down movie at the end
because,
of this shit.
Gerard
Butler should show up and just start breaking necks.
The character motivations in this movie go from strained to completely fucking inexplicable. And we'll get into that. But yeah, that does not surprise me to hear that Henriksen was not given any dialogue whatsoever. Because it all sounds like Henriksen dialogue. Like, it sounds like they wrote it for him. It's because he was doing his own.
Yeah.
And remember this era. Remember, this is Henriksen that had just come off of working with fucking James Cameron and
Catherine Bigelow.
Yeah. And like, he's in this era of being in some of the most robustly amazing action films of their time. And so, of course, this guy's going to spit out hard-boiled. But then again, like I talked in the past, I had one magical afternoon where I smoked three cigarettes with Lance Henriksen, and every word that comes out of his mouth is like that. Like, I recall, I don't remember if I told this part of the story, but I remember sitting with him and we were talking about this kid who had just talked to me and shared this really depressing story. And he goes, "Oh, suicide, man. Oh, when I was young, I was too angry to be suicidal. I just hated everybody. So I hopped a train and jumped around the country for 10 years. And it's like, holy shit.
I jumped a train like fucking Bronson in Hard Times.
He just hopped a train and got out of town because he hated everyone. And by the time he was 29, settled down in LA and decided to become an actor. And holy shit, Lance Henriksen, you got dark and awesome in the same fucking series of sentences. So the fact that all this came out of his mouth without being written doesn't fucking shock me at all.
Dude, by the way, sidebar.
Sidebar, sidebar, sidebar.
if there's one actor I believe has been in a bare-knuckle hobo fight in his life, it's Lance Henriksen.
Without a doubt.
It is absolutely Lance
Henriksen. It is written in the creases of his fucking face.
I also imagine he smoked all three of those cigarettes with you at the same time. Like, he just found a way to smoke all three cigarettes
at
once.
No, we just, you know...
He had a fucking pan flute of nicotine.
We just chained. We were literally lighting up each other's cigarettes. Like, it was...
That might be my sexual orientation, by the way.
Lance Henriksen cigarette?
Yeah, chain smoking with Lance Henriksen and lighting each other's cigarettes. It might be my sexual orientation. So, that's the thing. As you mentioned, the fact that Henriksen worked with Kathryn Bigelow, which only solidifies my point that this movie is Point Break on motorcycles, because the whole movie is just him going undercover with this gang and trying to turn a witness and trying to set somebody up and trying to get them all arrested. And
like, to an extent, except the thing about Point Break is he kind of gets caught up in that and he starts feeling for these guys. This Brian Bosworth doesn't feel for anybody.
He doesn't have human feelings.
He doesn't. In fact, there's a moment where the character he's been developing a relationship with throughout the whole movie gets shot in the face and he doesn't blink.
Yeah.
It's like, oh man, I thought she was cool. Like, it was, it's like, holy fuck balls. Like, this movie, this guy really doesn't give a rat's ass.
His only emotion is violence. Like, the only way he can react to anything is violence. Like, he cannot feel anything. He might be a Terminator.
He is one of the, like, this is one of the reasons why I didn't really have a strong connection with this movie. Stone Cold is a perfect example of everything that went wrong in the late 80s, early 90s in terms of action movie filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
Because the great action films have developed characters. And the really cheesy bad ones had these guys that were Mary fucking Sue's. Like, and that's who he is. He's good at fighting. He's good at motorcycle riding. He's good at being a cop and being undercover. He's good at fucking everything he does. Like, he just magically fixes everything. He can't be hit by bullets, even when they're fired right at him.
Sure.
By the way, William Forsythe has a Tech 9 that can't hit anything.
Yeah, there's a scene where he's basically playing William Tell with a beer can and a Tech 9 and somehow only hits the beer can.
Not only that, does it hit anything else?
Yeah, that's like, what I'm saying. Like, how in the fuck is this thing not perforating the lungs of the guy with the beer can on his shoulder and or the vehicle behind him?
Yeah. But it's not. It's a magical Tech 9. Well, there's this whole scene where he's like sweeping the street with it and nothing. And then, just to show you that the Tech 9 isn't full of blanks, he does shoot up a cop car, which, like every other vehicle in this movie, explodes on contact.
Everything in this movie runs on... It runs like on the gas tank of a Pinto. Like, everything is just waiting to fucking go up. And
everything wants to fireball. Blow up.
Yeah. If
you get your motorcycle gets tapped, boom.
Can we talk about early in this movie? The montage that begins this movie is showing us the bikers and how dangerous they are. We watch them shoot a Baptist minister in the middle of a wedding ceremony.
What?
By the way, speaking of not flinching, the bride and groom don't move. They don't move.
No, this is one of the centerpiece scenes of the movie. Like, it, the motivation of the entire movie is supposed to hinge around this.
Yeah.
No reason. Baptist minister in the middle of a wedding for no apparent reason.
And then they end up killing a judge by, speaking of explosions, he gets into a tiny fishing dinghy that, as soon as he starts the engine, becomes 3 Mile Island.
What? It's kind of ridiculous.
What? And the guy who gets blown up kind of looked like Wilford Brimley. So I just imagine Wilford Brimley, like, trying to go out for a nice little fishing trip. Just go, oh, fuck, boom, like oatmeal for acres and acres and acres. So that's how the movie begins. And then we go into, or I might have this backwards. I think it might start with, a la Cobra, a grocery store robbery, which is like, mwah, it is like one of the things that you will check off on the Brian Salisbury box. Like, how do you know Brian will love this movie? It starts with a fucking grocery store robbery.
Well, the first act of this movie really wants to be Cobra.
It so wants to be fucking Cobra.
Like, it's like, it really, really is Cobra with a banana hammock.
Yes.
This is important, man. Because there is a very, very important scene of Brian Bosworth walking around in a banana hammock and just not caring.
I did not need to see his Seahawk and two little Sooners. Like, that's not something I needed to view, but they are on display.
They are reclining in that banana hammock. It is a thing. Yeah, this movie really starts out wanting to be Cobra, and it opens up with that scene that's very much like it's ripped off straight from Cobra.
Yeah.
And it's really ridiculous. And then we move on to just how cool a cop he is and how he doesn't play by the rules. And
he's on suspension, but he walks into this grocery store.
For insubordination.
Because Boz don't play
You're supposed to assume is he probably knocked around a few too many guys.
Yeah.
They don't actually tell you.
He just wouldn't file his time cards like he was supposed to. That's really what they busted him for.
I mean, it really was. He probably sexually harassed a woman at work and disagreed. And
I imagine, by the way, that his suspension, they just threw a yellow flag on the floor and they're like, nope, can't have that. That's 15-day suspension. He's like fucking arguing with the cop referee. Oh, man.
And I love how there's a scene in this movie where the cop over the FBI agent overseeing him shows up to his apartment because apparently FBI agents wake up inhumanly early. And then Brian Bosworth, and this is what I was talking about. This is so indicative of the era. The entire sequence proceeds to be Brian Bosworth showing just how fucking alpha he is.
That's what I was just gonna say. Is why are the FBI agents betas? Like, yeah. Why is that
this
a thing?
Alabama fucking cop just kind of like, oh hey, check out the naked chick in my bed. Yeah, you ever see anything like that before?
Not
that well made.
By the way, that is Sam McMurray playing that FBI agent who you probably recognize from movies like Raising Arizona and the put upon stepdad from The Wizard. He's been in a lot of fucking movies.
Yeah, and this is not one of the better ones. but so like for some inexplicable reason, Brian Bosworth must just show just how fucking alpha he is. So he's walking around in the banana hammock. He's showing off his naked girlfriend. Like, it's like, what the fuck is going on here? It is just one of those, look at how cool our star
Dude,
is.
We are 6 seconds away from Bosworth just pissing on McMurray to claim
really,
his territory.
Yeah, like, you're my territory now. Yeah. You're you know. And
look at me. I am the Bosworth now.
I am the Bosworth. I'm sorry. That's just I am the Bosworth now.
Tom Hanks against Brian Bosworth. That's a movie I want to see. That's all I'm saying.
Give me a hell yeah.
Well, I mean, that would be a movie with only one actor in it, right?
Yes, it would.
So then he ends up, he gets blackmailed because the FBI are dicks.
Yeah.
And decide to put him undercover with a gang because the FBI has never heard of a biker gang and doesn't know that when you join a major crime organization, you kind of need to do deep cover for several years. But they're on a timetable.
Oh, yeah. Bosworth hasn't even seen the movie Deep Cover.
Yeah. This is a couple of weeks. We need to bust the biggest gang, and only you, mullet man, can do it.
So how does he get in good with the gang? He goes to a biker bar with... Again, the beta of this fucking FBI agent McMurray has to, like, literally rip the sleeves off of his shirt and, like, put a bandana and said, like, now you're a man. A man, man, man. And we can walk into this biker bar and he just basically starts shit with William Forsythe. It's basically a prison yard situation where he's like, who's the toughest guy in here? I'm going to go fuck with him.
Yep, and he fucks with him and that makes them go, huh. We kind of like this guy. He's causing trouble for us. It's like, what the fuck gang operates like this?
Also a staple of Baxley movies, a strip club that should not be a strip club. Like, it is basically a dive bar where people also are stripping for some reason.
Is it just me, or does it look like Aerosmith is playing on stage? Or that...
No, that was a woman stripping. You're thinking it's Steven Tyler. That was just an elderly woman stripping.
It is one of the more disturbing fucking strip clubs I've seen in a movie.
Yeah.
Just inexplicable.
But that was such, like, that is such a staple of this time. Like, movies we've covered, like, I Come in Peace and Tango.
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, Cash. Yeah, they always go to a strip club. Although Tango and Cash doesn't have an actual strip club. It's got something that I still to this day...
Oh, you're right. It's that weird fucking...
dance club.
Expressionist drum piece garbage bullshit.
No, yeah, I mean, that was the
Show
thing.
Us your kettle drums! Woo! No, that's not a thing, guys.
Show us your emotions through expressive dance.
Take off your pants, but mainly play the solo from the end of Coming in the Air Tonight. Do, 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 do. Not a thing.
Bad strip clubs.
Not a thing. Guys, like, it just makes me wonder who in the writer's room has ever actually been to a strip club.
All of them. It was the 80s, and writers are lonely. I'm telling you, man.
I love that. That sounded like you, like, defending your brother. Like, no, they're lonely, okay? Don't ask me how I know. I just know.
I'm a writer. That's how I know. We're a lonely fucking lot.
We will go to strip clubs that are mainly just drum sessions. We will go to strip clubs that are biker bars with older women kind of taking their clothes off and kind of
never. I feel like these are what directors of the time thought a strip club was.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's...
Do you think the strip club is what made Michael Douglas go, yeah, I know I'm a producer on this movie, but I'm just going to take my name off. I don't really want anyone to know that. Because he definitely is a producer on this movie and definitely took his name off of it so that no one would fucking know that. So
I don't know that it's the strip club that made him do that. Like... Have you seen the rest of the movie?
I have, twice. By the way, we didn't even mention the fact that both of us separately bought this Blu-ray. Because you can't stream it anywhere.
It's not streaming. And it's not an expensive Blu-ray.
It really was. And I love that
it's like, oh, Prime has it. Boom.
Olive Films put it out, which means the only special feature is the chapter selection.
The other special feature is the animated Olive Films logo at the beginning.
True story.
Hello.
They're not the best company, but they are the kind of company that will put out Stone Cold. So thanks, Olive Films, for making this episode possible. I'm so happy that... By the way, we didn't talk about the cover of this Blu-ray that makes Brian Bosworth look like a Terminator.
By the way, the cover is the best fucking part of this movie.
The cover would be an awesome patch for a biker gang, by the way.
You know what? I swear to God that this is the cover for Terminator 2, the Italian version.
Shocking Dark.
Shocking Dark. Like, that is...
Don't you know you gotta shock the dark? Yeah.
I mean, this looks like an Italian fucking poster if ever I fucking saw one.
Now all I want in the whole world, and I feel like we're gonna have to ask our friend Greg McLennan to make this happen for me, is a denim jacket with that Blu-ray cover on the back as a patch. Like, that's kind of... That's my Halloween costume right there.
I feel like that only works if it's also got like a patch for Striper on it.
Striper rules! Woo!
Yeah.
Do they though?
They no.
No.
So far in Stone Cold,
we're about an eighth of the way into this movie.
No, because now he's gone. No, we're right into the first act, and he has joined the gang, and he's a prospect. And then it's just a bunch of bullshit about him trying to, it's your typical cop undercover bullshit. You know, the lieutenant suspects him of being, you know, a cop, and Lance Henriksen is none the wiser. And he starts building a relationship with Lance Henriksen's old lady.
Yeah.
Who, you know, is half Lance Henriksen's age and clearly doesn't want to fucking be there anymore.
And has hair that is approximately half the length of his hair. We even mentioned Lance Henriksen's hair in this movie. It is just long and luxurious and stringy. He looks like an NWO era WCW wrestler is what he looks like in
this
movie.
That's not a bad comparison.
He looks like he should be running around with Razor
Except
Ramon
that he's
and the
still,
Giant.
He's still Lance Henriksen.
Oh, of course.
So he always looked 60. Well, that's the, dude, that's the thing. Lance Henriksen and as we were just mentioning earlier, Wilford Brimley.
Yeah.
Are two guys who, once they hit 40s, jump straight to their fucking 60s. Like, they do not pass go, do not collect $200, do not experience midlife crisis. You are just going to be grizzled and old for your entire life, and it's going to be fucking awesome. Lance Henriksen has looked the same fucking age for 30 fucking years, dude.
You know, Lance and I joined AARP as soon as we graduated college.
Yeah. That is exactly...
I think it's all the oatmeal.
It's kind of like Patrick Stewart. Patrick Stewart lost his hair at 21. And by the time he was commanding the Starship Enterprise, he's like in his late 30s, early 40s, I think.
I think it's the vampire from Life Force that did it. Whatever happened during that energy transfer took his youth.
And yet he hasn't aged a day since.
Since, yeah.
Like, he's just, he is a magical man. That is just a beautiful, beautiful man right there. And, but yeah, so Lance is grizzled and awesome in this. And William Forsythe is just full on William Forsythe.
I love that William Forsythe has never in his career ever felt the need to get in shape for a role. There's literally a shot where he's overseeing the boat bombing of the judge, and the way they frame the shot from below, his gut is just, he leads with his gut even while riding a motorcycle. It's kind of incredible. He doesn't.
Yeah, he's never had to either. He was he's a character actor, and he's always a great character.
Who cares if we're fat, right?
Exactly.
In the wise words of Brian Dennehy, we're character actors. Who gives a shit if we're fat?
But William Forsythe, like, this is in the air. Like, we have covered so many of his fucking movies.
We really have.
Like, it's, I don't know how many William Forsythe movies we've actually covered. We will one day go through and count.
So many that he's now called William Fivesythe. That's how many. That's how many. No, we're not bringing the Carsons back. You stay over there, goddammit.
One of these days we'll have to do the Rob Zombie Halloween, so.
Will we?
What?
We will? Hey, if you guys want us to cover that at $25, I'm just saying, that's the only time. When it's in a prostitution situation is the only time I will
talk
about that.
Somebody asked that earlier this week on when you did your drunken AMA. So asked what movie you really want to cover that I don't, and you drop The Shadow. And they also asked, what movie does Cargill really want to cover that Brian doesn't? And the answer is Halloween.
See, I'm surprised that that's the answer for you and not Rocky Horror Picture Show or something, you know, of that vein.
Well, no, I mean, I have a deep affection for Rocky because I did it for, you know, I've performed it over 500 times. But it's not something that, like, I need to do an hour-long podcast on.
I'm sorry, shortening it to Rocky just makes me wonder why Sylvester Stallone is not in Rocky Horror Picture Show and how much and better really, that movie would have been with him in it.
I mean, could you imagine Janet? I mean, that would, you know, it's, be fucking great.
It's astounding. Time is fleeting.
Oh, you think it was Riff Raff?
The time
madness
warp.
Takes its toll. Listen closely. Nothing very much longer.
You know he would demand to direct that movie. He would be like, "No, you gotta understand the concept. It's like a bad movie."
Well, this was
on
76.
Purpose.
This was before he really kind of blew up. So,
oh, this is still like, this is like just
75, 76. It's right when he would still do stuff. Yeah. And listen to the director.
Yeah.
Before he would take over and add a strip club that nobody strips in.
I think Dr. Frankenfurter should be called the Italian Stallion. Why? Don't worry about it.
But yeah, William Forsythe has been in a number of movies we cover. He's just one of those guys that when you need somebody who is, like, he's obviously in The Rock, just a guy who is just done with your shit.
As we covered last summer, Extreme Prejudice, where he's actually really awesome. He's one of the members of that really cool team that's in a completely separate movie.
This is true. Also, when I was describing this movie to someone recently, they were like, isn't that the one? And I was like, they were like, what's that movie? And I was like, it's the one with the football player. And they're like, oh, with all the fire? And I was like, what? And he's like, he throws the axe and he's like battling. I'm like, oh no, you're thinking of Firestorm starring not Brian Bosworth, but Howie Long. William Forsythe is also in that fucking movie. He was in Virtuosity. Like, yeah, he's
been. If you need to class up a football player, William Forsythe is your guy. By the way, William Forsythe not only has a really cool death scene in this movie, he has one of the coolest funeral scenes I think I've ever seen. Like, I had completely forgotten about this, but it's probably one of the better, more original things in this movie. When William Forsythe, by the way, this movie dispenses with characters without giving a shit. I think that is the biggest hallmark of this movie. Main characters just fucking die, and Brian Bosworth doesn't fucking flinch.
This movie, it's important to note as we're talking about this, had to be cut a few different times to get down to an R rating. It got the NC-17, or it would have been, I guess, X at the time, rating a few times. They had to really work to get it down to an R, because this is a violent fucking movie.
Yeah, and so William Forsythe gets a Viking funeral on his fucking bike, fucking sticks a cigar in his mouth, they douse him in gasoline and light him on fire and drink and have a shooting fest around his fucking corpse.
Which, a little segment of Unfiltered Wife, she was watching this with me and she goes, that's going to smell so bad. Why would they do that? That's going to smell so bad. And I was like, you're not wrong. This movie just doesn't fucking care.
It's also one of the most metal things I've seen a biker gang
hell yeah.
do. Like, it's like, I feel like to go deep cut, I feel like that's how the Bronx Warriors.
Oh my God. Yeah. Dead.
Like, they've got to have Viking funerals.
Oh, when Trash goes, he's getting a Viking funeral.
And Trash kind of does his walk around the flames. And
his gay gorilla walk, which is the only way I can think to describe his gait.
Oh, God, I love that movie so much.
Can we do another episode?
You can find that one way back in our catalog. That's like episode 2 or 3.
And it doesn't cost you $25, although I kind of want to do another episode on that movie where we also talk about Escape from the Bronx, the sequel that has at least 30% more flamethrower than the first movie. So there's that at least.
It's not as good.
No, it's not as good at all, but it does have 30% more flamethrower in it.
It does have 30% more flamethrower.
So anyway, Brian Bosworth is now in with this group. He knows that they are they're in hijacking and they are doing hits for people. They're in the drug trade. There is a scene in this movie where they dispatch the National Guard to help combat the threat, because these bikers, what they really want to do is they want to take out the state's attorney who is prosecuting one of their brethren who has been found guilty of the murder of the priest at the beginning of the movie, and they sentence him to life. And this state's attorney challenges the state Supreme Court to overturn that sentence and give him the death penalty. So this is the gang's whole mission, pretty much from frame one, is that they're going to kill this state's attorney.
To get revenge.
Yeah.
So this makes sense, right? This is a plot that makes sense to you, those of you out there in listener land. Yeah, because that's not what this fucking movie's about. It's kind of what this movie's about. Not what this movie's about. So they're doing that.
It's more what this movie's around than what it's about.
So, long story short.
Has never been our MO.
Or thin script, abbreviated even further.
the abridged of the abridged.
The abridged version. So Brian Bosworth hooks them up with a drug deal and promises the FBI, oh, by the way, midway through the film, the FBI is like, yeah, by the way, this was a terrible idea, so we're closing this down. He's like, no, you can't close this down yet. I might have them. And it's like, but why? You didn't even want to be here. You're totally in the clear. No, I've got these fuckers.
And then Ferris Bueller comes out and goes, just go home. Just what are you doing? Just go home. It's over.
Yeah, it's over. The movie ended. And the FBI said, wait, what were we doing? We're sending a mullet in to get killed. And just, there's more collateral damage. Like, this was a terrible idea. People, like, a cop blows up in the middle of the street and nobody notices. Like, this is not cool.
By the way, from the rest of time, whenever we talk about a movie with an undercover cop, I'm just going to refer to that cop as a mullet. They send in a mullet.
So they send in the mullet. And you go to pull him out. He won't come out. And he's like, look, I've got him. I can set it up to where we'll get the mafia.
Yeah.
The mafia trademark. We'll get the mafia, not a mafia family. We'll get the mafia and this motorcycle gang. And so they're like, well, shit, how can we pass up a deal like that, mullet? So they won't pass up that deal. So they go ahead and get him a truck full of drugs,
which they have just sitting around and at the impound
barrels and barrels of drugs.
So much drugs. And also, can we talk about how this movie becomes a mission in Grand Theft Auto 4 for a while, because they're in this jerkwater town where apparently the bikers and the mafia are like challenging each other for like collection spots. And Brian Bosworth jumps on the hood of the mafia, again, trademark, the mafia's car, and goes for a ride that leads to him being thrown off, but then the car being slammed into by a semi and him just walking up and breaking one of the guy's arms.
Yeah. And again, these, lots of character motivations that make sense here. This group of mafia guys who see one biker and throw a grenade at him to kill him.
By the way, never something I've seen in a mafia movie where the mob's like, oh, we got to kill that guy. Open one of the boxes of grenades we keep in the car. What?
And throw it at a biker. But then this other biker jumps on the hood, fucks up their car, fucks up two of their dudes, and one of the other guys points a gun at him and goes, I think you're done for the day, son. And that's it. Like, no, we're not going to shoot this motherfucker.
Can you, like, I imagine the other guys in the car are like, oh, wait, you had a gun? Why the fuck did we use the grenade?
Like, that was just drawing undue attention.
I feel like maybe we should tone it down and not attract all of the law enforcement in the tri-state area. Just you, Sonny, use the goddamn gun next time.
Yeah, so anyhow.
Wait, is that Brian Bosworth?
They sell these drugs to the mafia in this terrible sting. And we find out that the whole thing is they're doing this and he's trusting this guy. Because Chains needs to raise a lot of money in a short amount of time to fund D-Day.
Yeah.
And what is D-Day? D-Day is the third act of this movie.
D-Day.
That makes no sense with the rest of the fucking movie.
And again, I just kept waiting for Gerard Butler to show up because this is a White House Down situation.
Dude, it's different. Like, it's not just White House Down. Like, this is just, they go from being a biker gang to a terrorist organization at the flip of a switch.
Oh, yeah.
And
they go from SS to ISIS.
Yeah.
Real quick.
But, so, let me get this straight. just so I understand. They're wanting to get revenge for their one buddy who's incarcerated.
But for rather, a thing he absolutely did.
He absolutely did. Inexplicably. But instead of trying to get that dude out and go on the run, or having his Bolivian friend take him to another country, we're going to have a terrorist attack on the Supreme Court
of Alabama.
What? Is it Alabama?
It's definitely Alabama. I'm sorry, it's Mississippi.
Mississippi.
But it's not what you think it is. It's not Washington, D.C. It's not the capital, which means they are exerting this much energy, wasting this much manpower to get revenge on someone in the Mississippi Supreme Court.
A district attorney.
Yeah.
Who they could have shot any time or burned down his house or done anything like that. Mm-hmm. No, they go in and orchestrate this entire terrorist attack, sacrificing dozens of biker lives before Brian Bosworth even shows up.
This is true.
Like, by the way, they pull this terrorist attack and their dudes start dropping like flies before Brian Bosworth has escaped the death trap that he's been set up in. This is one of the most poorly orchestrated.
Well, they think 12 bikers can take on the army. Like, I'm sorry, like, to me, the scope of this plot is, I kept thinking, this is almost twice what we're paying for water. I'm like, you need to set your sights a little higher, but not exert so much fucking 9/11, like planning for, it makes no fucking sense.
It makes no sense, and almost as much sense as the plan to kill Brian Bosworth, which is we're going to strap a bomb to him and throw him out of a helicopter to distract the police. Like, I don't understand how that's supposed to work. I don't get it. None of anything that happens after the drug heist. Like, up into the drug heist, it's just a ridiculous cop movie. And then it just goes off the rails in a way that I cannot wrap my head around. There is no logic to anything about the end of the movie except that Brian Bosworth is in a fever dream. And where he all of a sudden believes he's in an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie Stallone movie.
That movie is Commando, because there is that much fucking collateral damage happening in this movie.
There is, like, yeah, and that's but the weird thing about it is typically when you have a movie with a superhero character, everybody's busy getting their asses whooped until said super cop shows up to save the day. But no, the other cops, while getting mowed down, are doing just fine mowing down everybody else. Like, left to their own devices, these criminals never would have gotten out of the Supreme Court. All would have died, and there just would have been a few more civilian casualties. That's all it would have cost. Instead, Brian Bosworth comes in and just starts mowing dudes down. Because that's what the hero does. And the end of the movie becomes a ballet of ultraviolence replete with several really good stunts. Like, this is where the film's like, okay, you know what? This is functionally batshit. It doesn't make a lick of goddamn sense, but I'm all in. And
yeah.
I am eating frozen pizza and guzzling a beer, and that's what this movie was designed for. And by God, is it that.
This movie isn't frozen pizza. This movie is drunkenly ordering Pizza Hut online at 11:30 at night, and then shows up.
No. That those details sound too real, Brian. Did you drunkenly order pizza?
The best part was I ate two slices and threw the rest of it away. Because I was like, I really just wanted two slices of pizza. I was already home and way too drunk to drive. So I was like, oh, Pizza Hut has this meal box for $10 that got delivered to my house. I ate two pieces and then said, fuck the rest. So
now that Patreon money's really doing
$25 if you'd like us to cover your favorite movie. But the thing is, like, I feel like that's very endemic of this movie, where it's like poor planning, just a lot of poor planning and wastefulness around springing this guy from the Mississippi Capitol building. And yeah, and again, fucking Ferris Bueller should show up to Bosworth and be like, dude, just go home. This is gonna get sorted out. Don't worry about it. But what the end of this movie becomes is a stuntman's playground. And that is my favorite part about this movie, is they are doing shit like, I think the signature stunt from this movie is at one point, now you have to remember, this is motorcycles flying out of the back of a truck into the state Supreme Court building and just like revving up around the rotunda. It's like, it's incredible. There's just motorcycles all over this building. Which, again, I feel like is a Baxley trademark, is I'm going to take a place that shouldn't have vehicles wandering around and stuff a bunch of vehicles in it. It's very much the Corvette in the hallway of Craig Ferguson's house. So the Craig Ferguson? No.
No.
Craig T. Nelson. What are they doing here? And then, at one point,
I'm not even famous yet.
I don't know why I'm here. At one point, a motorcycle, the driver gets kicked off and it keeps going out a window into a helicopter and exploding.
Because of course it does.
They throw a motorcycle at a helicopter. It is like Fast and Furious level stunt planning. It's just like, we're going to take this thing and throw it at that thing equals explosion. And there's scenes of people getting like kicked over the balconies. There's one amazing shot of somebody who gets shot and falls backwards, and then the camera just tumbles like it's a Gaspar Noé movie. Like, it just follows the up and down all the way to the floor.
Whoa. What are you doing throwing an art film director
in? You're the one that told me that for a portion of that movie, everything's upside down.
Yeah,
so.
No, Climax is, yeah, but I would never reference Climax in Stone Cold. I mean,
but, well,
you don't cross the streams like that, man.
Except.
You don't cross your Bosworth and your Noé.
I feel like you should. Because you have to admit, Climax sounds like a movie that would have starred Brian Bosworth. That sounds like the title of a Brian Bosworth movie, where he's like, he works at a fireworks factory.
He's been doing
all
those Christian movies lately. I don't know if Climax, I think Climax is a little too,
Really? You think the star of One Tough Bastard is against a title called Climax? That's all I'm saying, man.
I don't know, man.
One Tough Bastard, where he co-starred with MC Hammer. Guys, you can't make this shit up. I mean, you can, but it's not as funny as the truth of a movie like One Tough Bastard.
Please, Hammer, don't hurt him.
please, Bosworth, hurt everybody, which is basically, he goes in like a fucking wrecking ball and knocks everybody to the ground. Everything's on fire. Although, leading up to that stunt I just mentioned with the helicopter getting slammed into by the motorcycle, that helicopter flies down Main Street so goddamn low and right at a crowd of extras. Like, the whole time I'm watching this, like, please pull up. Like, this seems like a real bad idea. Like, somebody get this helicopter away from those extras. Like, it's dangerous. The stunts are so good that you will worry for the lives of everyone involved in this movie. At least that's my take on it.
You know, my favorite stunt from this movie is there's this really great shot of a stuntman falling on a car.
Yes.
Usually. And it's
usually
inverted.
They dummy up, right?
And what it is what you see the fall, and then, you know, they do the dummy. Instead, they've got a real fall, but then they cut to a guy actually slamming into the car. And it just looks fucking great. And it's like, holy shit, this is the type of shot you don't really see, especially not in a movie like this. And yeah, this is one of those things that reminded me of Maniac Cop and Maniac Cop 2.
Yeah.
This is not the level of stunt work you expect in a movie of this budget level or of this prominence. But here are some stuntmen working their fucking asses off, doing some crazy fucking shit that while you're in the movie, you're like, well, this is stupid. But if you look at it from a stunt point of view, you're like, holy shit, that's fucking dangerous. Like, those guys are badasses.
It has one of my favorite stunt tropes of this era, which is I'm imagining the next day when the proprietor of the small town gas station comes to work and goes, what the fuck? where the fuck is my business? It was here last night.
It was here last night, but now there's just a burning trailer of drugs. What?
What's okay? Speaking of waste,
it has my favorite trope of this era of filmmaking, which is, holy shit, why are we now watching a movie where the stuntmen are chasing each other? Like a minute ago, that was William Forsythe and Brian Bosworth, but now it's just two guys dressed like them now chasing each other.
Now it's Chet and Chad, and Chet and Chad are really giving it their all.
They really are, but they're clearly not Brian Bosworth and William Forsythe.
I do want to point out that Brian Bosworth gets the FBI to loan him a tractor trailer full of drugs that he then immediately blows up.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like there's going to be some paperwork.
Well, yeah, I feel like that was a reshoot. Like, that is one of those scenes where somebody, because he actually has a moment, he's like, well, now there's $1 million worth of drugs on the street, and I'm responsible. And so he does the responsible thing, which is chase the guys down and blow up the drugs. Like, because we can't have people wondering about all these drugs he put on the street. So clearly we'll just destroy someone's livelihood.
Yeah.
By burning their business to the ground by crashing a tractor trailer into it.
It's pretty remarkable. Speaking of reshoots, by the way, Craig R. Baxley was not the first director of this movie. That was Bruce Malmuth. And when he was replaced, this is what's interesting. When he got replaced by Craig R. Baxley, there was a whole section of this movie. They spent about $4 million shooting this entire section of the movie that was the backstory of Bosworth's character. His wife, his kid, his like previous problems, why he was suspended.
Oh, character development.
Yeah. And they said, nope, don't need any of that.
We just need a blender, some terrible foods, and a type of animal that actually can't eat any of this.
Bruce Malmuth, by the way, the director of Hard to Kill, was also the director of a movie that I can't believe we haven't covered yet called Nighthawks. So, yeah, somebody we will talk about who got replaced on this movie.
Yeah, the guy who made Nighthawks and Hard to Kill. Fire him and bring me
the director of Action Jackson.
Yeah, that was those words that came out of someone's mouth, man. I want the guy that made I Come in Peace. That guy.
I
you mean Dark Angel? Shut up!
No, shut up! No, yeah, between 88 and 91, Craig R. Baxley is who you went to if you wanted an inexplicable action movie. But yeah, I think the entire ending of this movie is just a lot of guys having a lot of fun with stunts. By the way, there is a member of this gang. It was driving me fucking nuts. I was like, I know this guy. I know his face. Where do I know him from? And then I remembered that I just started watching It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. And the guy who flies the helicopter for the motorcycle gang plays Mac's dad on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. And Mac's dad's character is like an ex-con who's always like somewhat threatening to kill them. And it's like, oh, that's why I know you, because you're playing the same character in a helicopter in 1991. That makes a lot more sense. But yeah, and then the movie just, it ends with Lance Henriksen pulling a Carl from the end of Die Hard, where it's like, we think he's in custody. And then he like gets a cop's gun. And wouldn't you know it? Wouldn't you know it, it's not Bosworth that takes him down, but Beta McMurray, who finally steps up like Carl Winslow and puts two into Lance Henriksen, who then proceeds to have a Yaphet Kotto death that just kind of goes on for a while.
Yeah, and then somebody, I'm guessing Baxley, decides that they're fucking Kubrick and want to do a really impressive fucking long shot of Bosworth walking through the chaos, and it's actually the most poetic, interesting thing in the fucking movie.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, this required a lot of orchestration. This is a really cool fucking shot.
We call that the Danu Boz. I think in film school, that's how they teach
Boo.
It. I'm just saying. Also featured in this movie are character actor Richard Gant, who you will probably know as the coroner who eats Jason's heart in Jason Goes to Hell. Also an actor in this movie, speaking of Catherine Bigelow in Near Dark, who has spent his entire career basically playing bikers, is a guy named Robert Winley, who you'll probably remember as the biker who tries to put a cigar into Schwarzenegger in Terminator 2 when he walks into the biker bar. He's also the guy who gets his throat cut by Bill Paxton in Near Dark in that biker bar. Like, literally his entire career playing bikers. Like, in the background of shots, that's
he
all he ever did.
He was like Danny Trejo, where it was just that, what did you do? Well, I just got out of prison. Why? I was in a biker gang. You're hired.
And you're hired. So, yeah, a lot of people you will recognize I also want to talk about the fact that when Bosworth walks into that grocery store at the beginning of the movie, he's dressed like one of the bounty hunters from I Come in Peace. What is the deal with the lapel on that leather jacket? It fucking stretches out for miles. Much like the destruction in this movie, that lapel goes on for fucking miles. It looks like shoulder pads. The lapel is so big, it looks like fucking shoulder pads. It's nuts. And then if they spend the whole sequence just shooting up boxes of Ritz crackers. And my other favorite thing about grocery stores and movies from the 80s is you see like Ghostbusters and Batman cereal on the shelves. Oh, oh, I love that shit. Like that, that is for me the equivalent of seeing the movie theater marquees on 42nd Street in Shakedown. Like so many boxes just getting to, I love this fucking movie. Okay. I'm just going to admit, I fucking love this movie.
I love that you are hung up on the lapel.
Dude, look at that fucking lapel. For days it goes on.
We have an old in-joke about banisters. I'm feeling like lapels are your banisters, my friend.
I'm just saying he looks like an intergalactic bounty hunter in that movie. And I half expected him to get on the radio and just be like, hey, dirtbag, you're a lousy shot. It's like, yeah, this definitely fucking feels like Cobra. Which brings us to the junk food pairing.
Give me a hell yeah!
And I'm just going to call this lizard juice. It's a little thing that gets whipped up by Bosworth in this movie.
This stupid thing. Oh my God. None of which, by the way, that lizard can eat.
Oh no. There's a special note on the IMDb trivia about how that's actually bad for lizards. And I'm like, no fucking shit. But this is what he puts into the blender. Starts off with some orange juice. Then not one, but two Snickers bars. Half a bag of potato chips. One banana and two raw eggs with the shells.
I am of the opinion that Baxley was ripping off Shakedown.
Yes, he basically, Bosworth is making his own version of the Shakedown. I will say this, though. I would still rather guzzle down some of that lizard juice than cut my pizza with fucking scissors, because that is the real abomination. Who does that? Don't cut your pizza with scissors. Don't be a Cobra. Be a Boz.
What's wrong with cutting your pizza with scissors?
So many things. All of the things. Don't do that. Use a pizza cutter or eat it. Like a human, eat the whole slice. What are you doing? What was it too big? Was it too big to be eaten by one person so you had to slim down your slice of pizza? It's wrong.
It's
un-American.
It's a moment so perplexing. Is that, I think, the third podcast you've gone on a rant about it.
Don't cut your pizza with scissors. That's all I'm saying. Guys.
Hey, yeah. Before we go,
yeah.
we pulled a bit of a boner on a recent episode.
No, we don't do that.
Yes, we do.
We never do that.
We always do. It's rare. But I wanted to correct this one because I may have suggested that that Police Academy 4 or 5 may have been the last
theatrical. Yeah.
And no, it turns out that all the way up till 7... 7 was barely released in theaters, but it still got a very small theatrical release.
Is that City Under Siege?
No. I forgot that City Under Siege even exists. That's 6. It's Mission to Moscow.
Oof.
Is the 7th one, I believe.
That's the 7th sign, man. That's like that's the coming of the end times. You know,
and I'm not even going to say that that's definitive, because fuck, those all blend together at that point. But yeah, so apparently no. All of the Police Academies get some sort of theatrical at some point.
That's more horrifying than drinking lizard juice or cutting your pizza with scissors. The fact that there were 7 theatrically released Police Academy movies.
And they just got worse.
Well, yeah.
They just, like, they were in a downward slide that to hell. Like, the last movie made, like, $128,000 theatrically.
By the way, Downward Slide to Hell, much better title than Stone Cold. That would have been an amazing fucking title for this movie, because they do send a lot of people to hell in this movie.
You know
movie.
What we didn't mention? Why is this movie called Stone Cold?
Because the character that Bosworth played, his last name is Stone, so...
So this is one of those terrible movies where we've gone ahead and named the movie after half of the person's last name.
John Stone, and he's very cold-hearted. By the way, speaking of wrestlers... There's a scene in this movie where Lance Henriksen is just taking a shower at the biker compound, and with wet hair and the shape that he's in, looks exactly like Jake the Snake fucking Roberts, and it was kind of tripping me out a little bit.
Post-drugs or pre-drugs, Jake the Snake?
Mid-drugs.
Okay.
During drugs. But yeah, that was kind of freaking me out a little bit. Guys, thank you so much for joining us, and I apologize that we've interrupted October. with the small divergence into Stone Cold. But again, if you pay us money, we will do shit like that.
And it ties into last week. So you it know does. Because Brian Bosworth does make an appearance in the most recent Longest Yard.
This is true. If you would like to hear the most recent junk food cinema or things from our past, you can go to Blog Talk Radio or iTunes. And then, of course, you can follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema, Facebook, facebook.com/junkfoodcinema. Our store, again, is junkfoodcinema.com/store. And again, patreon.com/junkfoodcinema. If you were like, you know, I feel like they should talk about more Brian Bosworth movies or maybe Firestorm.
Whoa.
I'm just giving them ideas.
Whoa.
Yes.
Whoa.
Yes.
Stockroom.
That's all that needs to be said. But guys, I just want to remind you, for the millionth time, God forgives, but the Brotherhood does not.
God forgives, Blockbuster doesn't, but if you lucked out, they're not collecting it.
Olive Garden, when you're here, you're family.